Though I do love my makeup routine, I feel like I want to spice it up a little bit. I could use a bit of a refresher because I've been doing the same thing for a while. However, I will definitely still use the same makeup line I've been using for 4 years now. And so whether I'm just simply adding my Liquid Lash Extensions mascara by Thrive Cosmetics for an everyday touch of mascara look, or going all out with their highlighter, eyeliner, and eyeshadow for some full glam, I simply love applying Thrive Cosmetics to my face. And why? Well, the quality is honestly impeccable, and they support a great cause. It's even in the name, Thrive Cosmetics, Cause. So Thrive Cosmetics and Bigger Than Beauty Skincare aim to empower customers, employees, and giving partners to live confidently. And they practice responsive giving, donating high-performance products or much-needed funds to help communities thrive. I can't emphasize enough how great their mascara is. I'll never give that up. Even if as I refresh and redo my makeup routine, I'll always be using their Liquid Lash Extensions, because their unique formula creates tubes around each lash, lengthening them. And it's super easy to remove. It just slides right off with some warm water and there's no smudging. Plus, it has some nourishing ingredients which help support longer, stronger, and healthier looking lashes over time. And as someone with blonde eyebrows, I also appreciate their Infinity Waterproof Eyebrow Liner. This easy-to-use waterproof pencil holds like a wax and blends like a powder. I love it. You can't beat it. And so you can line your brows to give them structure and create natural-looking strokes. I love the natural look to fill in sparse areas. It even comes with a spoolie brush to lift and tame your brows after application, and they have 8 shades to choose from, and it adjusts to your natural brow color for a perfect match every time. Pretty awesome. So refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/magic. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CauseMetics.com/magic for 10% off your first order.
When you're a kid, you're moving energy all the time. You're almost like forced into it because you're always doing things that you didn't decide to do. People set them up for you. You're always a student. You're learning all of the time. So you're always kind of like moving that energy. But it's very easy to get stagnant and to crystallize as an adult. We all love crystals, but you don't want to be stuck. You want to keep moving into your life and keep growing and keep finding ways to not be good at something, but then to surprise yourself. And so the Never Ending Now Poetry Journal, it is for poets, it is for artists, it is for writers, but you don't have to be a professional artist or even a hobby artist to do this. You just have to be a person that is willing to open up to something new. I promise if you take this seriously, it'll take you seriously and it can be surprisingly transformational.
Hello, yummies. My name is Raquel, and welcome to Your Own Magic, a podcast for the creative and the curious soul. In today's episode, oh, this is so special because I love having this human on the show, as he is one of the most talented poets in the world, I'd say. NQ is an Emmy-nominated poet, multi-platinum songwriter, world-renowned keynote speaker, and the best-selling author of Inquire Within. NQ's talent, Adam's talent, and influence has earned him a spot on Oprah's Super Soul 100 list, no big deal, which is, the world's most influential thought leaders. And it's pretty cool that NQ, of course, helps us tell our stories, but he even has collaborated with countless brands and companies to help others and their employees tell stories. And I mean, NQ just has an unparalleled gift of storytelling and collaborative content creation, which is why he is clearly living his purpose, especially as he talks. You can tell, you almost feel like grabbing a pen and and paper right there to begin writing yourself, because, I mean, he writes not only to entertain, but also to inspire and challenge us, his audience, to delve deeper into our human experience. And his work compels us to simply ask the profound questions about ourselves and about our environment and simply the world at large. And so I'm so thankful. I had the pleasure of sharing many conversations with NQ on the podcast before, but I gotta say that this one is just simply my favorite. And so in this episode, we dive into his latest project, The Never Ending Now, which is a deeply personal poetry album that NQ describes as some of the most vulnerable art that he's ever created. And he believes that this album has the potential to positively impact people's mental and emotional health. And so he's proud to share it with the world. Our conversation, we cover, man, a range of topics, from the role that his beautiful wife, Andriana, played in this project to his journey into becoming a poet. And we also explore the creative process and discuss how to get unstuck and let the words simply just flow from the heart and reflect on how poetry can serve as a mirror to our lives. And we also touch on the events in our lives that act as both creative outlets and sources of healing. You know, there was a moment in our discussion where I wished I had shared more when he asked for a memory, but I hesitated. When I reflect back, it's one of those moments where you have a conversation, you reflect back, and you're like, I wish I brought this up, but that's okay. Despite that, I believe this episode is a brilliant piece of art in the Your Own Magic catalog. So I'm excited for you to listen to it, to hear it. And so don't forget to order The Never Ending Now, by the way. And it's just awesome that it is an album and poetry journal. And let me know, let him know you enjoyed this episode. His Instagram is NQLife. And as far as the brilliant magical sponsors that you hear today, the sponsor show notes are at yourownmagic.com/sponsors. Anyway, with all of that being said, I believe it is time to let the magic begin with NQ.
Every love poem I ever wrote was about you. You are every dream I've ever had. Somehow they've come true. You are every dream I've never had. Somehow you've come true. I gaze into your eyes and know there'll never be a better view. I see heaven in your face. I see children in your smile. I see our future in our present. Will you stay with me a while? Will you dance without the music? Will you laugh without the jokes? Will you cry without a reason? Will you play with all the notes? I've come to love you in a way that is impossible to quote. Forever and a day is not enough. Forever is a joke. Any moment we're together is forever, now or never. Whether you are in my arms or too far away to measure, I respect you in the pain. I accept you in the pleasure. I'll be your shelter in the rain so you can shine in any weather. Every love poem I wrote was an invisible letter, reaching out beyond my time and space to what I would discover from a place that was unknown to a home inside each other. I am floating on a cloud. I am singing in a gutter. Our relationship is sailing and we do not need a rudder. I don't care where we go from here because here is with each other. Your soul is like a mirror. You're a goddess and a lover. You're a sister and a brother. You're a father and a mother. You're a son and you're a daughter. You're a stranger and a friend. Even when I end, our love's not something I can transcend. You're more than just a perfect 10. And you're a perfect 10. But your beauty lies behind your skin. It's the way you taste, reminding me of everyone I've been. It's the way you smell, reminding me of everywhere I've been. Your sweetness overwhelms me. Can we end where we begin? I'll only come back to write our stories intertwined again. You're the greatest poem I ever read. You made me find a pen. You're the greatest poem I ever wrote. The wisdom from within, you inspire me. It took me lifetimes to comprehend. You're my who, what, where, and when. You're my why I even try. I vow to have you and to hold you till the day I say goodbye. I vow for better or for worse, as long as you are by my side. I vow to cherish you in sickness and in health until I die. On our first date, you asked me why I hadn't settled down. I refused to give an answer, but I have your answer now. I was always waiting for you. You're the reason that you asked. My words have never done you justice, but I search for them at last. I've asked myself 1,000 questions about who I want to be. I've asked myself 1,000 questions to reflect on you and me. I've asked myself 1,000 questions, but your love's what set them free. There's only one question left. So I'll ask it on one day. Will you marry me?
Oh, God, that gets me every time.
She's upstairs.
What did she feel when you first performed that for her or shared that with her? What did Andriana feel or say?
She was crying, and she said yes and jumped into my arms, and we kissed and hugged. And I had a photographer that I had hired to hide in the bushes like a ninja. And he just like jumped out and captured the moment. It was really beautiful.
I think I remember seeing the pictures as well. That's so, so special. And it's, even though you are sharing this with her, when you're talking about love, I feel like now I'm in a place where as I relate to this, I'm feeling this like, oh my gosh, those are the words how I describe this person and how I feel about him. And so it's such a beautiful piece to connect with.
So it makes you reflect on the relationship.
Him. Yeah. Right, the now. Entire time I was picturing Jordan.
That's amazing. I mean, that's what art is supposed to do. It's supposed to be a mirror for people to see their own lives inside.
Yeah. And I love that you're doing a new album piece. It's not only in a book or also a journal, but this is something that people can listen to, an album. It's a poetry album, which we don't have a lot of in this world. And I feel like it's something that we need more of in this world. And she's even featured in this. How was the creation process, and how does it feel to have something so unique and new out there in the world?
Yeah, it's an accidental album. I didn't like purposely set out to create it. It just kind of happened. And then once it was done, I had had such a healing journey creating it that I honestly wasn't sure that I wanted to release it to people as a product, because I didn't want it to be judged or criticized or even validated. But I decided to send it to 5 people that were close to me. And my criteria in releasing it was, if one person got back to me out of those 5 and said that it was like truly meaningful to them, then I would be willing to open up to the authenticity and the vulnerability of the art that we accidentally created together.
Glad you did. I'm glad you decided to share it instead of robbing us of this beauty that I know you don't care for the validation, but it's something that's very meaningful to help us heal as well.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I had gotten an email like a few years back from an incredible composer and pianist. Her name is Isabella Terzo. She lives in Italy. And she wanted to try to take a shot at composing to some of my poems. And so I sent her some things, and then she sent some things back, and we made 3 demos. And I liked them a lot, but I wasn't sure what to do with them. You know, it was kind of like, is there a market at all for spoken word and composed piano with light strings? And Like, do I want to put all of my time and energy and focus into making something that maybe nobody's going to want to hear? And so I kind of like wasn't sure how to answer that for myself. And I put it down. And then Andriana and I were sitting in the car one night. Andriana's my wife, as you know. And we were discussing a medicine journey that I had gone on where I took like 3.5 grams of mushrooms and MDMA and DMT. And it was a very powerful experience for me and brought up a lot of concepts and emotions that I was working through. And we were already pretty deep into the conversation. And so she decided to take out the phone and start recording it. And she told me that she was going to record it, but we were so in the flow of the conversation that it didn't change the nature of how we were communicating with each other. It was just almost like a documentation of this special moment that I was having with my partner and my best friend. And then she sent me the recording like 4 days later, and I listened to it. And that's when I started to think, like if this conversation was the through line for kind of like expanding on that spoken word composed piano music that we were making, it could make sense as an album. And then randomly, Andrea Bocelli's producer, or at least one of them, heard one of the demos and was like, we would love for you to come perform at the Hollywood Bowl.
What?
So I was like,
so cool.
Excited about this. Isabella was excited about this. She flew out from Italy. She was pregnant. And 2 days before, the producer was like, I'm so sorry. We have to pull out. Like, we don't have enough time. So this was pretty disappointing, but we also had 2 days in Los Angeles. So we decided to go into the studio. And in the studio during that time period is how we sketched out the rest of the album. And then I recorded it within like a week or two. And here we are with the Never Ending Now.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool. So the initial vision started from Andriana bringing out her phone and recording your conversations. What I heard, aside from your poetry, were the conversations between you and Andriana, the ones that she recorded on her phone?
Yeah, yeah.
That is so amazing and beautiful. How does she feel being a part of this album?
She said that she had this like intuition to just record the conversation.
So cool.
And she knew that I was like considering making an album with some of these demos that we had created, but wasn't sure where to go with it or if I even wanted to pursue it. I had done like 70 shows that year. So I had a lot of other things that were taking my time and attention. I also write songs, and luckily I like a lot of the things that I do. So
yeah.
I have a lot of interests and a lot of like breadcrumb trails that I want to follow. Yeah. So what I would say is that like she's slightly embarrassed or has a vulnerability hangover, as do I, because it wasn't like, you know, even when you tell the truth, you can tell the truth, but you can present the truth in a way that makes you feel empowered. You know, mm-hmm. It's the truth that you want people to see. It's the truth from the angle that makes you feel like you look good. Does that make sense?
100%.
And this was not that. This was like, you know, me and the closest person to me in the world having like a very raw and real conversation about my childhood and my path to self-love and love with a partner.
Well, that's why it's only that much more beautiful, though, is that it's so organic and raw and authentic. And that is what the world has been craving for a long time now. And I feel like that's what people really connect with the most. That's why podcasts, you know, are thriving, is people having these raw, vulnerable conversations. But better yet, this one that was just, you had no idea you'd be presenting this to the world. That's how you know this was so, I could tell that you two were just really in a genuine moment. And I wondered, I was like, are they acting? Is this in a studio or is this real moments? And I love hearing that she brought out her phone. And then I also love hearing that an amazing composer came and helped you, Isabella, all the way to LA. Like this was all naturally, organically supposed to happen. It's so beautiful. And then you also created a journal piece for us to be able to, write down how our feelings with the and our connections with the poetry. How did you decide, like, oh, I'm going to also create a journal with this? And did you also write the little prompts for us?
Yeah, so I've been doing workshops for 25 years. And I started out doing them in libraries and after school programs, junior highs, high schools, Upward Bound, this place called Art Share in downtown LA. I did juvenile facilities, and it was mostly for teenagers to explore their stories and then share them and to become empowered through poetry. And I saw how transformational it was to give them an opportunity to separate themselves from a moment or from a belief system or from a story that was trapped inside of them, and then share it with somebody and to be unconditionally accepted and celebrated no matter what the story was. And it was very powerful. And I did it for years. And then at a certain point, I ended up getting my first corporate gig. And they asked me to do a workshop. And in doing that, I realized very quickly that adults need it as much and sometimes more than kids because they have more stories that are piled on top of other stories. And it's hard for them to reconnect to that internal compass and true north, that intuition. And oftentimes adults wind up moving into a career and they stop ever being creative. And creativity is another modality for stress release, just like yoga or breath work. It is literally an outlet for better mental and emotional health. And so then I started doing all of these company, community, corporate gigs, and I loved doing them. And I saw how powerful it was for them because it was a trust building, team building experience. It was a way to contain intimacy into a short period of time and then allow people to really see each other as human beings beyond the masks that we put on when we go into a job. And that, I think, ended up leading to better collaboration and creation and communication. But I always had to be there to facilitate. I would try to give people the infrastructure to do it without me. But oftentimes, I think people would have this experience and then I would leave and they wouldn't necessarily go back to poetry the way that I would want. And so when I decided to release the album, I thought these are all unreleased poems. Why don't I put them into a journal and then share all of my teaching, facilitating experience, and wisdom over the past 25 years so that people have this infrastructure to take their own healing journey? And that's when we came up with the Never Ending Now Poetry Journal. And this is the Emerald Green. There's also Mocha Brown. We partnered with Passion Planner, who's a leader in the space, and they did an incredible job at designing this from cover to cover. And like, I am beyond proud of it. And I really hope that it winds up being a trampoline for people to explore their stories, to express, empower, and release.
I like the use of that word, a trampoline. And I'm gonna have to get myself an emerald green one. I'm gonna be ordering it, definitely. And I'm happy
Well,
to
we'll send you
hear.
one.
No. I like to support. I like to support. I get sent stuff, but I like to support, especially the artists,
Thank
So
you.
no, you're not sending me one. I'm buying one for myself. But also that makes me so happy to hear that a corporation hired you to allow their employees to tap into themselves and really express themselves in a creative way because, my friends in the corporate world, I can tell that sometimes they crave something like that. Jordan, for example, he always has to find a, I can't believe I've talked about him so much on this podcast and I rarely talk about him, but
Great.
it just feels very natural right now. This is what's coming to mind, but he works in the health industry, healthcare industry, and for himself, he has to sing and play guitar and draw and everything to, you know, just unwind. He has to do that. And I think that's a great way for him to express himself. And I think I just, there's so many people that need, I know, I understand, because I used to be in a corporate field, need that creative outlet. And so I'm glad that you were able to provide this frame for them. And yeah, they're gonna be able to have a journal now, but I do believe, maybe without you knowing it, a lot of them hopefully use the tools that you help them with, because if it's something you realize you need, usually people continue to do it.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I mean, Jordan is obviously like a very sensitive, intuitive person. And so,
Totally.
you know, I'm going out on a limb. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that he finds a lot of joy from this, but he also probably knows that he needs to move energy. You know, energy has to move. Emotion is supposed to be energy in motion. And if it doesn't move, it gets imprisoned inside of you, and then it becomes disease, you know, dis-ease, or you take it out on somebody in traffic and you don't even know why. And so you have to come up with more and more intentional ways to move the energy as you become an adult. When you're a kid, you're moving energy all the time. You're almost like forced into it because you're always doing things that you didn't decide to do. People set them up for you. You know, or you're always a student, you're learning all of the time. So you're always kind of like moving that energy. But it's very easy to get stagnant and to crystallize as an adult. And we all love crystals, but you don't want to be stuck. You know, you want to keep moving into your life and keep growing and keep finding ways to not be good at something, but then to surprise yourself. And so the Never Ending Now Poetry Journal, it is for poets, it is for artists, it is for writers, but you don't have to be a professional artist or even a hobby artist to do this. You just have to be a person that is willing to open up to something new. And, I promise if you take this seriously, it'll take you seriously and it can be surprisingly transformational.
I think that's where a lot of people get stuck, is they think this needs to sound good. This needs to, what if people read this and this just sounds like a second grader wrote it, which they can write beautiful pieces too. But how do we move from the mind into the heart when we are creating? I'm sure that's a question that many people might ask.
You have to choose something moving and meaningful to you. You know, if I was, for example, I'm not a painter. So if I was to sit down at a blank canvas, it would be overwhelming and intimidating to me. So the first thing I would do is I would say to myself, don't try to make something great because it's not going to happen. Just make something true, make something honest. And if you make something honest, it will be great because it will be whatever you needed to alchemize into the world. How would I do that? I would then think of something that is either moving to me, meaningful to me, something that I'm working on, a problem, an issue, some area of my life that I want to grow. I would think of something that I'm grateful for. And then I would choose the thing that really like lights me up. And then I would just start painting with that thing in mind. And I guarantee that whatever comes out will be what needed to come out. But I don't paint. I write poetry. And so that's how I ask people to approach writing poetry as well, like to think of something in their life that sparks them. And if it brings up an immediate emotion, then there's something there to creatively explore. So I give people the permission, but I also just give them the invitation to see what happens.
I love that. And it's not like they need the pink slip, but sometimes first we can get inspired by hearing another artist like yourself for us to want to tap into that space and feel free to express whatever wounds or whatever comes up that we just know we need to let out. You had a Ernest Hemingway, I think it was an Ernest Hemingway quote in there that I thought was perfect. I wish I wrote it down. Do you know what I'm talking about the typewriter?
It was
Let it bleed.
just sit
I
down
should
at a
have,
typewriter and bleed, if you want to be a writer.
just let it out. And I know that, man, I used to write all the time and I used to love writing poetry and I stopped. And I will always tell myself I want to go back to it. And I used to share it with the world or on my Instagram or whatever. And I just stopped because I got in my head and I wasn't allowing what I felt and what I knew better, but I don't always do better. So some people might be listening. They're like, I know that I love this and I can do this, but why, how do I just allow myself to just begin again, you know?
Yeah, I think the journal takes you very intentionally through the steps that you need to do to hold on and let go simultaneously.
I might be going through something and I want to use this as a catalyst to create, to write something, but I get stuck in my mind like, oh, this needs to also sound perfect or sound a certain way. But no, I just want it to just be and just let it out. How do I use how I'm feeling as a catalyst for the art I create? For example, Goldfish. Like, how did you write Goldfish? What were you going through that made you realize and connect with this metaphor of a goldfish?
Yeah, I was in my cousin's backyard and she had this pond, and there were fish, these really large fish that were like swimming around, and I thought they were koi fish. So I said, "Sophia, when did you get these koi fish?" And she said, "They're not koi fish, they're goldfish." And I said, "Really?" Because my only experience of goldfish is you would get them at a fair after you won something in a plastic bag, and then they would live in a bowl for 2 weeks and they'd die and you'd flush them down the toilet. Like they were very small.
Yes.
And she said, goldfish will change their size depending upon the environment that they're in. And I said, really? And she said, yeah. And I looked it up later that day and it was true. Goldfish will literally change their size depending upon where their home is, what are their boundaries, And I thought, I relate. And that's where the poem came from.
Brilliant. See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, you just knew you were living an experience, and then you knew to use that in your life to create this work of art.
I could
We
ask.
sometimes seek that, but it doesn't always happen.
Well, I could ask you right now about your life, and I guarantee within 1 minute, we could find a poem that is dying to be written.
Probably.
But I can't be in front of everybody. So, like, for
Yeah.
example, I'll just pick like a random chapter in the book. Let's see. Okay, so what is a significant moment in your life that changed who you are? A moment where you walked into it one person and walked out a completely different person. It can be positive or negative, but it has to be something that brought out intense emotions and shifted who you are at your core. So these are just some of the prompts and the questions. What emotions came up for you before, during, and after this moment? How has this moment impacted your life as a whole? Are there any lessons you learned from this experience? And then I go into my personal example. My personal example would be when I met my father for the first time when I was 15 years old. This was obviously a moment where I walked into it one person and walked out a completely different person. I remember not knowing what he looked like and thinking that every guy that walked past could be him. I remember shaking his hand for the first time and looking into his eyes. Even as I write this, I can feel the charge around that experience. It brings up immediate emotion and intensity, which starts to allow me to move from my mind into my heart. This is the best place to create from. Close your eyes for a minute or two and think of something that you'd like to explore today. You don't have to use the prompts as anything other than a starting point. Allow yourself the freedom to express beyond the questions or use them as a guide. Once you've decided what your subject is, distance yourself from as many distractions as possible, then put 20 minutes on the clock and begin writing your poem. So, that particular piece, I do a poetic example of it. So I do one of the poems from the album and then move into the prompts for people. So it kind of like, when I'm doing these workshops in person, if I am asking other people to be vulnerable and I'm not vulnerable first, it's literally irresponsible of me as a facilitator. So I have to show up first and say, this is a safe space and I'm risking too. And I try to do that in the journal for people.
Man, that's beautiful. And that is so helpful as well to have that as a tool in front of you. And I appreciate you sharing that, by the way. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. Did anything come up for you when you were listening, or were you just thinking about the kind of like, I don't know, format?
A few potentials, but I was like, is this something I feel like sharing right now? But I was not thinking too much about the format. In all honesty, I was thinking before you shared your experience, I was thinking like, what was a moment in my life? And I'd have to really sit back and reflect.
Yeah.
And I'd have to take a moment, you know, it wouldn't be just right off the top of my head. I'm like, why? So that's when I got into my head a second. I was like, why do I not have a moment in a life where I'm like, oh, that was it. That changed my life forever. I can't think of a moment like that. I guess I could. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, first of all, you don't have to share, but the thing that you want to go into is the thing that you wouldn't normally talk about after 15 minutes at a dinner party, because
right.
Writing the poem is for you. And like the album kind of leads you through fears and sadness and joy and dreams, and ultimately winds up in gratitude and love. The journal does the same thing. So like, you're actually writing your own poetic hero's journey in many ways. And it's a 10-week course. You know, you could do it at your own pace. You could do it however you want, but it's kind of like meant to be a poetry version of The Artist's Way.
Oh yeah. By Julia Cameron. I love
yeah.
that. That's very special. It does sound like it's more than just you helping people become a poet or a creative, but really healing and full of self-discovery. And I love work like that.
Yeah. Well, whatever you're thinking about, maybe you'll decide to write something, and then maybe you'll decide to share it with me at one point or not.
Oh, definitely. Also, I was just thinking, like, now, as I said that to you, when I said that I don't have a moment, it's funny how our mind works, right? 5 different moments came up in my head in that moment as I was sharing that with you. Our mind is so wild. Our memories are so wild. I know that you started poetry. What? How old were you when you started poetry?
I was probably like 14.
Okay, so right before you met your dad.
I met my dad. Yeah, that's right.
Right before.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you think, well, of course, your poetry has evolved over time, and also your songwriting, you write songs, wrote some songs for an artist I love, Selena Gomez. How has your writing, your poetry evolved over time?
I mean, it's the longest relationship of my life, other than at least within myself, you know, like obviously my mom or some kids that I grew up with, but it is rhythm and rhyme forever. I don't like really remember a time when it wasn't like foundational to who I am. And I was always like really obsessed with expressing myself through these different kind of like formats that include rapping and poetry and writing. And I think in many ways it was my first form of meditation, because it was a way for me to feel empowered. And I didn't really feel that way in my life. But when I was like freestyling, I wasn't thinking about anything but the next line and the next rhyme. And it put me into the moment and allowed me to kind of like feel my own identity in a real way.
That's so cool. And you might not like to hear this, but I feel so jealous that you had something that you just knew and you've ran with it. Like, this is something that you just knew you were meant to do and you've ran with it. And it's such a beautiful thing to see somebody live their purpose. And it's something that came to them at such a young age. Was there ever a moment where you were like, I don't want to write poetry. I can't write poetry. I feel like a creative block. Was there ever a long period of time of that?
No, I've never had
Wow.
A long period of time of writer's block, but there are other consequences to doing what I do for a living. For example, I didn't make any money literally until I was like past 30. So I was like really, really struggling and was very unsure and unclear how I would monetize what I do without losing my artistic integrity. And it really took a long time and a lot of soul searching. And there were plenty of moments when I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, this isn't going to lead to anything. But I had no plan B. And there was this voice inside of me that kept creating. And then once I made things, I was kind of like, all right, well, I guess I should share this with somebody. And if you just put one step in front of the next over and over again, you can go a pretty far way. When you're an artist for a living, you have freedom. You're not in anyone else's structure. You're not in anyone else's system. You own your own time. And that's a beautiful thing. But what you give up often is certainty.
100%.
You know, when you're in somebody else's system and structure, you have certainty, you have security. Whereas, like, for me, it was like, I don't know where I'm going to eat next or how I'm going to pay rent. And, you know, I got so used to that being my life that once I even started making money, I was too scared to spend any of it. You know, I was like, I don't know. So, look, I'm so grateful that I've turned that corner in a significant way and that I get to do what I love for a living. I understand and empathize with your jealousy because I have some jealousy on the other side from the standpoint of like, you know, it was cool to always know what I wanted to do, but like that fucking sucked too because there was no yellow brick road to arrive where I am right now. So I was like a pirate, you know, I was like in the jungle with a machete.
Total pioneer too.
Yeah, so but you know you're doing that as well. You know you're a pioneer, you're a podcasting pioneer and you've developed a real relationship with your community and you've been willing to show up and tell the truth over and over again and I'm sure that transition couldn't have been easy all the time.
Definitely not. Yeah, that's very true. Very true. So I understand, and I also understand where the security part of it is rough. You know, there were moments where financially I was doing great, and then right now I'm in a moment where financially I'm not at all doing that great. It's amazing. I have all the freedom in the world to do what I want, but I understand where you're coming from when it comes to, yeah, security sounds nice, but also I love my freedom, even if that means I have to sacrifice some things for right now.
Yeah, I think in an interesting way, it goes to our earlier conversation about people maybe choosing to have that security over freedom, to have
Oh
the
yeah.
certainty over.
I totally get that. When people choose that road, totally get it. And also sometimes people love what they do and they also still have their 401k from their employer and they love that, you know?
Yeah, and I like, you know. More power to you and follow your own
100%.
bliss, but don't lose the creativity in the process. Like you, and if you don't have the time and the space, you have to make the time and the space. You know, and if you don't want to do it through poetry, do it through something because, you know, dance or, you know, make a painting, make a song.
Song.
Woodwork, whatever you want to do. Yeah.
I do love that you sing a little bit with your rhyming, which is also somewhat rapping in your album. Did you ever take singing lessons? Because I feel like you'd be a good singer, or you are a good singer.
Thanks. I'm definitely not a good singer, but I like to
No,
sing. Singing is
like
fun.
your album. Singing is fun. I'm not a singer at all either, but it just you have maybe it's because you have a natural musicality. And even the way you speak, even as you and I are just talking with each other right now, I'm very much standard American, no musicality in my voice. You have this nice natural musical rhythm, and it's probably because it's ingrained in you. And you're just doing what you're supposed to do. It's awesome to see.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I got like kicked out of choir, I remember. I like cussed when I was like 15, maybe. I don't remember what happened. Mr. Smith was like, "You're out of here." He yelled at me and I left and then I quit.
When you were working with Isabella, what does she do again as far as the instrument she plays?
She's a pianist.
Pianist. Okay, so I guess I could have figured that since that's what was on the album. But how
She
did
plays
you
the banjo. By the way, I don't even think
this?
that's a banjo.
That's not a banjo.
What is that?
Banjo's too
It's
dumb.
an accordion, actually.
Tambourine? Oh, you're thinking accordion, yes. I'm
Banjo is
I thought you were
this.
doing cymbals. Yeah. Banjo's a
Yeah.
little. I
I
love the
don't know.
banjo, by the way. Yeah, I love the banjo. But I
Yeah, the
love
banjo is
piano.
rad.
Banjo is rad, but the piano is my favorite instrument. And I love how she conveyed the emotions in her music with your poetry. It just felt so symbiotic or and harmonious. So it took you both a week in the studio. I'm curious how, as someone who's not a musician, right? You're not a musician. How did you work with her in creating the music with your poetry in the studio?
So it took a week for me to record it after we went into the studio together, but literally we were only in the studio for 4 hours.
Oh, so she did the piano with
We
your.
sat down and sketched out the album live. Like she was
So
playing the
cool.
piano and I was saying, "Hey, once I kind of like knew that the conversation was going to be the through line in the beginning and the middle and the end of the album, I knew what other poems to choose.
Yeah.
And so I started like playing with those poems with her, and she had some things that she had already composed. And then sometimes she would actually like compose something either in real time or take the demo of that thing and then send me something later. So yeah, it was a very, very fast process. And I have to
So cool.
thank Andrea Bocelli's producer for
Making her go out there.
for giving an assist to bring the album into the world.
So if that didn't happen, do you think you wouldn't have created this album? Or maybe it just would have been a little created a little differently?
I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I don't know if that hadn't happened, would I
Yeah.
had, kept going. 'Cause I very easily could have heard the recording and been like, that's a great idea. And then something else caught my attention.
Yeah.
I think it was like the focused day that we had in the studio together that was kind of a fluke.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it just feels like it naturally manifested. I also am just so curious, who are some of your poetic inspirations? Since you were 14 years old, do you have any poetic or musician or songwriting inspirations or other artists?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to put a lot of them in the book because we have these like legendary quotes throughout that kind of serve as like these mini bridges in between the poems and the prompts and the opportunities for people to write. But then when we were in the final home stretch, we realized that we needed to get copyright stuff for a lot of these quotes. So the people that I would mention, like Leonard Cohen or Maya Angelou and Bukowski, all of these people that have inspired me over the years, unfortunately, they had to be removed. And we were able to find really great public domain quotes from a lot of other people that I really respect, but some of the greats, unfortunately, had to be left out. I would say those three were pretty inspirational for me. And then my community, I came up in a place called the Poetry Lounge in LA. And so my contemporary poets, spoken word artists really kept me digging deep because the level of talent and the caliber of performance was so high that if I wanted to compete in a way that I felt proud of, I had to keep going back to the drawing board and evolving as an artist.
That is very cool. Do you still talk with some of your poetry lounge community today or keep in touch with any of them?
Yeah, I mean, all of them. We don't hang
Amazing.
as much as we used to because we're all adults and have
Yeah.
a lot
Oh,
of
of
like
course.
priorities and responsibilities. But I'm actually seeing Shihan, who was one of the founders of the lounge, on Friday, and we're going to the Greenway Court Theater here in Los Angeles to see one of our other mutual friends, who was also a founder, Dante Bosco, who has a one-man show. So we're gonna have kind of like a
Ooh.
mini reunion.
Very cool. It's spoken word poetry would be a bit different than I used to in college compete doing prose.
What was that
Because
like?
I loved it. I loved it so much and I was very competitive. It felt like something that I was meant to do because I was very into acting at the time in my early 20s and well actually since I was 8 years old when I was acting. I don't know, that just seemed like a natural transition because I also loved poetry. So it's really cool.
What was an example of your go-to piece? Do you have
Oh
anything that
gosh, I
you
don't
would share?
remember. I do not remember at all. It was all random. We had, books that we would go through and just connect with a monologue. But I did win first place at where was it? Chapman University. That was cool.
That's awesome. Did you
But
have
I
like
do not remember. I
Okay,
don't at
you don't
all.
have to. I'm not gonna push you in a direction you don't want to go. But what is the caliber of like deciding that something is good through prose? Because when I think of competition, I think of slam poetry, and we
Yeah.
were all a part of that slam movement and won the national championships as a
So
team
cool.
from the lounge in 2003, and we performed, 2000 seat theater, and at the time that was like everything. So
That's
I
amazing.
understand that kind of like process, but what is the process for prose?
You wrote your poetry. I didn't. I found a monologue or a Yeah, I would find a piece, a monologue, and I would perform and feel into the piece and perform it as I saw fit for myself. And that was it. It was basically like, have you taken an acting class?
Yes.
It truly was like you are reciting a monologue. You dig in deep into yourself, into a moment where you can connect with this piece and bring it out. That's truly what I did, at least, when I approached prose. Which I know was not supposed to be the same as acting, but that's just how I approached it, and it worked for me.
Cool. I love
Yeah,
acting. I mean,
I
acting
know.
is
It's
another
so
one of
fun.
these outlets for moving energy.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That was very a healing experience, but also kind of traumatic too, because I wasn't ready yet when I went to New York Film Academy at 18. But it was quite an experience.
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, the teachers would, I mean, I loved a lot of my teachers. There's one teacher in particular, though, that I would mentally, as a young, new woman, newly entering adulthood, there were a lot of things I didn't feel comfortable with. So I kind of gave up on it after that. And that's when I went to college, and that's when I found speech and debate, but I didn't care to do any debate or arguing whatsoever. My dad's an attorney. I was like, I have no interest in doing that. But I loved the one thing I loved in speech was the prose and being able to do monologues. And so that's when I got into that. But yeah, I found it very traumatic for some reason doing an acting class. We were there from about 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. every single day, and we weren't allowed to audition. Do you know how New York Film Academy works?
I don't.
Okay, well, it was very intensive for a year and I loved it. I still am in contact with some people that I was in that class with, but man, there were some traumatic moments for sure. Not intentionally. The teacher's one of the best out of us, but I think I was too mature. I was not ready yet mentally. Some young actors are, but I just wasn't.
I mean, acting like any form of art, you're describing reality, but you're also practicing reality.
Yeah.
And so you have to be careful what you're describing and what you're practicing, because
Totally.
you can accentuate it and you can exacerbate it if you're not careful.
Totally.
I remember I took an acting
Yeah.
class once, and I did a scene from the movie Shining. And it was like I was playing Jack Nicholson's part, and he's a losing his mind, you know? So I like practiced the scene over and over again. And I used to like smoke weed and just practice this scene, you know? And the night of the performance came and I was in this like crazy zone, you know? My eyes were all wily. And we got up and we do the scene and we finish. We got a standing ovation. And I walked off stage and I got sick, like literally immediately afterwards. And I was sick for like 2 months. And I realized after that, I don't know how to separate, like when I'm practicing like reality like that, I'm experiencing reality like that. And it really like impacted my body. And it actually changed also how I was writing, because what I realized is when I was going through negative things, you know, it's one thing to like tap into that, move the energy, and then release it and focus on what I want to create. It's another thing to focus all of my energy on what's not working and then keep sharing it with people over and over again, which kind of creates more not working. And so it made me, from that point on, realize that when I was going to explore the darkness, I was always going to wind up in the light for myself and for my audience, because like I never wanted to drop people in despair and then leave them there. I always wanted to say, you know, let's explore the real things, but then let's always like look for hope.
I think that's beautiful. And also, if you don't explore the darkness, which I think the acting class and perhaps even he's snoring. Maybe wake up.
No. Let him snore.
The audio listeners will be like, what is that?
Well, no, they're going to be like, what that banjo conversation we had earlier. They're going to be like, what is going on here?
By the way, for the audio listeners, when he was trying to play a banjo, he was actually doing a cymbal or the, what is it called?
Accordion. I think it was really corny.
Well, it was great.
It was really a cornian.
A cornian.
Hey.
But yeah, I think that is one of the most beautiful things about that experience, was being able to get into the dark places, but also like you, I wasn't able to totally tap out of it. And having to share some very personal things with a bunch of people at that time didn't feel right yet. Now I'm like happy to, but that was another thing, you know?
Yeah, I also think strangely, to be a teacher of art is like a really sacred job.
Yeah, as you know.
I don't like it when people make themselves into the star. Like when the teacher like really is just like a unsatisfied artist, and then they try to control their students, or they try to make you feel like there's only one way to do art, and there's not. There's fucking infinite ways to do art, and that's what makes it art. And like when you trap people inside of the only way that you do it is the only way that it can be done, you actually steal their voice. You steal their uniqueness. And especially in a situation like you're talking about, like you force them into emotional places or sharing things that they're not ready to share. And that can be pretty uncontained and scary for people.
Oh my gosh, you just nailed it. I can tell you some other time about this one teacher, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. So I'm glad that you're a teacher that when you do teach your workshops, your retreats, or whatever it is, or even sharing this on the podcast, you're teaching all of us right now. You definitely are very aware that we're all so different and you keep it a sacred space. So thank you for being a teacher that is compassionate and aware of that.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's because I'm also still a student. And
yeah,
I'm teaching myself. Like I'm the first person in my audience. So
yeah, I love that you say that. Now, one, do you have any other messages about this book that you'd like to share, this album? And two, do you want to perform one more piece by any chance?
Yeah, sure. You can kind of like tell me what you'd like to hear, and I'm happy to do it.
Oh, okay. I wrote them down. I loved that. Okay, I can't find where they are, but at the top of my head, I remembered the happiness one, and some one on the purpose, passion one. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Maybe one of those.
Okay, well, let me I'll give my final
Message.
messages to people, and then I'll do the poem. Yeah, look, this is a really special project for me. It's something that is the culmination of a lot of years of work, and I'm excited to give it away and see what it becomes for other people. We're releasing it for Mental Health Month, and this is really an opportunity for people to have a new outlet for exploration of who they are, what they want to let go of, and what they want to manifest in the world. And for me, the album was, like I said, a path to self-love and romantic love. And I hope that the journal winds up being an opportunity for people to take their own unique poetic journey.
Thank you, Adam. That's beautiful.
Okay. Happiness is not a point, it's a range. It's not a goal that you reach because it's constantly in phase, but if you stay inside the margins and you consciously engage, your happiness can find a balance on the razor's edge of change. The main problem is society has taught us that our happiness is something we can gain, something we can claim, something we attach to our names so we distract from our shame and search for happiness outside ourselves, perpetuating pain. But happiness is not a place. It's not a destination on the map. There's nothing that's outside of us that's going to show us where we're at. Awareness is a conscious act. My happiness is not an accident. I practiced it. I practiced it and practiced it. I tried to master it, but life's too multifaceted. Besides, we'd all get bored without resorting to change. What's my point? Happiness is not a point, it's a range. If you don't know what your purpose is, tell me what your passion is. Don't know what your passion is? It's where inspired action is. It's what enthusiasm gives a manual for how to live. So if you still can't fathom it, simplify the catalyst. Tell me what your interests are. Help explore what you're about. Don't know what your interests are? What are you curious about? Tell me what annoys you. Tell me what you love to hate. Now tell me what destroys you and use your voice to go create. Play in what employs you or find a hobby on the side. Nothing that you want to try. Imagine you're about to die. That would probably force you. If someone tried to take your life and they were coming towards you, would you fight to stay alive? I remember nights when I would contemplate my suicide. I'd lie awake debating non-existence till the sun's rise. I was feeling forced too. I had shit to alchemize. Of course, it had to course through. Now my dreams are actualized. God does not ignore you. Get over being victimized. What does time afford you? A paycheck is a compromise. Tell me what implores you. Are you down to sacrifice? Now tell me what rewards you. I'll point you towards the afterlife.
Yomies, that is a wrap. I hope this episode was expanding for you in some way, shape, or form. Feel free to visit our site at yourownmagic.com or check out my shop, eyesofaspen.com. Connect with the other Your Own Magic listeners. We would love to see more conversations started on the Your Own Magic Facebook group. So with all that being said, thank you so much again for tuning in, and I hope you have a magical rest of your day.